Good morning, council. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Hope you had a good holiday in New Year's. If not, why, there's lots of time to get it right for the rest of the year. We would like to excuse two members this morning, Christy Morin, the at-large position. She will not be here this morning. And Sheriff Noel from Beaver County, Utah Sheriff's Association, will not be here. Let's go ahead and get right into our meeting. We'll first look at the approval for the September 14th minutes. Those were sent out, and you also have a copy of them in your packet. Are there any changes that need to be made? Seeing no changes being recommended, I'd look for a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Okay, motion to approve.
Second that, Mr. Chairman.
All right, second that. Toby, we're going to slow down a little bit so we can get the record. Julie, got both of those? Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the meeting, or the minutes stand adjourned. Stand approved. Okay, we're going to turn the time over to Director Stevenson just for a second for some housekeeping.
At this time, I'd like to introduce new executive assistant, Julie Gomez. She's replacing Sean McCleave. So you saw emails from her. She is the new person in charge of post. So for reimbursements, please forward all emails and correspondence to Julie, and she has to do a good job of taking care of you. Let's be nice to her today, her first minutes.
Post-council. Break her in, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Julie. She was very active in getting these packets put together and corresponding with those of us who had some other things that need to be put in a delayed fashion. So thank you, Julie. All right.
Also, we'd like to introduce one of our newest agents. That would be Jeff Adams here. Stand up, take a bow. Okay. If you have any questions of him, please give him a shout. All righty. Thank you.
And also, just so the council knows, we've extended another offer for an investigator, and she's currently going through the hiring process, and I anticipate having that individual sometime mid-January, maybe later January. So we'll have five investigators in that award.
Further. All right, thank you. All right, let's go ahead and jump into our agenda here. We'll start with Wade Brewer, Uinta Basin Applied Technology Satellite Proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, council members. So the administrative rule 728-401 outlines how an academy or an institution of higher education approaches the council to request for approval. And without reading into that, just wanted to hit some of the high points. The first and obviously foremost high point is that this entity needs to demonstrate that there is a need for a satellite academy in the area. And so before I turn the time over to Tammy Wilkerson, I will just say that she has had several of the agencies, sheriff's departments, city police department, and county commission approach her institution, the Uinta Basin Applied Technology, and say, there's a need in our area. Can you provide this? And without taking away her thunder, I just wanted to let the council know that we believe that she has followed this administrative rule that outlines the process that an entity needs to go through before making application to become a satellite academy. So I'm actually going to just stay up here with Tammy. I'm going to turn some time over to Tammy Wilkerson. She is the Associate Vice President, Program Development for Uinta Basin Applied Technology Center.
Thank you for considering our proposal. Our mission at Uinta Basin Applied Technology College is to provide training for economic development in the Uinta Basin. And we work closely with our industries, including the police forces there. We have Duchesne, Daggett, and Uinta County Sheriff Department. We have Roosevelt City, Naples City, and Vernal City. We have three jails, Uinta, Duchesne, and Daggett County jails. And we also work closely with our county commissioners in both Uinta, Duchesne, and Daggett County. They came to us and indicated a need to bring back the Post Academy. We had it from 2000 to 2007. With the boom in the oil industry, we weren't able to fill the enrollments. And so now that things have slowed down, everybody's crying for police officers. And this time around, they're really crying for basic correction officers for the jails. So we're real excited to fulfill this need. We have the facility, the infrastructure in place for that, and we will hire it. Initially, we're going to run it. We would like to run it Monday through Thursday, 10-hour day. That way, the officers have the opportunity to work in the evenings and on the 3-day weekend. We will also provide a director, a part-time director, who will work with directly with you all. And so that's our goal right now, is to offer it once a year. If the need arises, we'll offer it more often. But right now, our accreditation through the Council of Occupational Education, in order for us to keep our accreditation, we not only have to give quality training, but we also have to have job placement. And so we need to make sure that we don't flood the market. We need to make sure that everyone that we train has a job when they're finished. That's part of our accreditation. So not only will we be monitored by you all, we will also be monitored by the Occupational Council for Education. So do you have any questions for me?
How long would the class last? When you offer it once a year?
We will offer it once a year, and you can complete all three series in about 5 months. So, is what we're figuring. The hours would be the same as, obviously we would follow your curriculum and the same hours and everything.
I had one. As far as certified or capable staffing, not a problem out there?
It's not. Like I said, we've been working closely with the entities out there. I have been assured that they have multiple post-certified instructors. We will hire a director who is post-certified so that director can teach for us as well. So that's budgetary reasons. We want that person to be able to teach. We don't feel that a director position is a full-time position, so we want them to be able to teach as well. Our sheriff's departments, both in Uinta and Duchesne County, as well as Daggett, have indicated that they will provide any specialized training that we need from their areas. So we're pretty excited. Yeah, we have a great community.
LT, if you could explain the site visit and what we have observed from the council.
So part of the process is that, obviously we audit each academy at least once a year. Sometimes we have to go and visit an academy for whatever reason more than once, but at least once a year each academy gets a site visit from us. So if this is approved by the council today, we will conduct a site visit. Since they haven't been in operation for a number of years now, we want to make sure that the infrastructure is there, as Tammy has indicated. Verify that. Kind of get into the nuts and bolts of how the academy runs. Make sure that the curriculum that we provide, access for all their instructors in the area to access the curriculum that they need. I have checked with our defensive tactics instructor, Sergeant Glenn Pereira, who administers the defensive tactics program throughout the state, and he has talked about they have a pretty good core of defensive tactics instructors that could support this program in the area. They support it now just for in-service training, so it would seem like it would be make sense for them to continue that training in an academy setting.
Director Stevenson? I will tell you, Council, since this program shut down, I've had a lot of feedback and concerns about recruiting and getting people to stay out in the basin area. What is very beneficial about having a program on that side of the state is that locals will attend this program and locals will stay and be long-lasting employees for counties and municipalities. So it's a huge benefit to Post to have that program up and running versus the closest academy is Utah County.
Utah State University Eastern, which is the old College of Eastern Utah, 80 miles away. But in all the letters that we received support for this program to become unmothballed, for lack of a better term, that was all mentioned in all the administrators that send in the letters for this proposal, saying that they need homegrown people to stick around and work in the area, and that is a big challenge for them right now.
Colonel Feuer.
I would concur with what Director Stevenson has said. We, in the Highway Patrol, we have about 33% vacancy rate in that area alone, and we transfer people out there. They stay there for a year, and then they leave quickly because it's so expensive, and we want those homegrown folks who are already living and residing in that area to stay there long-term. So I think this is a wonderful opportunity for us to see recruitment numbers boost in those areas, especially that area.
Did you need a motion to approve this?
Yeah, that's where it's heading. Is there any other discussion for the council? If not, we'll move to a motion. All right, seeing no discussion, take a motion.
So we approve the application for Uinta Basin Applied Technology Satellite Academy.
Second?
I'll second
it. Second? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that passes.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll next move on to our quarterly reports. Lieutenant Acosta.
Good morning, Council. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. Again, this is our statistical report for the last quarter. The current period would have been from September 11th to December 30th, 2015. We received a total of 35 complaints from outside agencies and other people. We opened up 21 investigations. We had no administrative hearings. We closed 3 cases without any action whatsoever. We had 1 voluntary relinquishment. That was for an individual, for misappropriation of public money. We have done 151 application reviews, 17 applications for waivers and reactivations, 31 applications for dispatchers. Total applications we reviewed 199. We have a total of 68 active investigations and open investigations, which is the ones that have something going on but we're waiting for returns. We have a total of 104 cases. So that's where we're at in investigations. Any questions of my group? Thank you.
Thank you. Lieutenant Brewer.
Okay, once again, for the reporting quarter, this is fourth quarter 2015. In the Basic Training Bureau, we had 2 law enforcement blocks graduate that were law enforcement only, Class 315 and Class 316. Class 315 started with 31 cadets, and we certified 31 law enforcement officers. That's the first class that we've had in a long while that has not had a failure for whatever reason. That's a really good group. 316 started with 28 cadets, certified 24 law enforcement officers. Some of the departures in that class were for 1 law enforcement officer failure. Let's see, law enforcement entrance exam failed twice. Let's see, 1 did not have the end post completed by the time he was ready to take the certification exam. And then 1 individual failed the SFO exam, so that didn't allow him to go on to the law enforcement block. And then class 317 that started August 31st, that started with 22 cadets, and we certified 21 special functions officers. And one officer was removed by his agency for failure to pass their background investigation, something along the lines of a psychological test, if I remember right. Then class 317 that graduated December 17th, right before the Christmas break, we started with, in the law enforcement block, we started with 23 cadets, and we certified 19 law enforcement officers. So just along the lines of the basic training as well, to give the council just an idea of what's going on with us, we had a backlog of training applicants for law enforcement that were new hires, so much so that we started a class today that was completely full. So it's full with special function officers. And then our pinch point has always been during that law enforcement block, meaning that we have so many people wanting to join in that law enforcement officer block that we started another class at the end of this month. We added another class January 25th, which will begin their law enforcement block in March 4th, which allows us to kind of open up that and get rid of that waiting list that we had. So some of your agencies may have expressed to you as administrators saying, hey, we're having a hard time getting folks into the law enforcement block specifically, so hopefully this will open it up. So the two classes that we have starting this month, when they start their law enforcement block, those classes are already full right now. And when we consider full, 34 is our cutoff, and we're already at 36 for both of those classes. So just to give you an idea, that as the economy gets really good and agencies start to fulfill their spots, I've been told by the Satellite Academy directors, their numbers are way down, but our numbers are way up like we had in 2008. So we haven't seen numbers like this since 2008 for the post side of training. Just something kind of interesting that's a dynamic that goes along with our ebb and flow of the economy. So in the basic training side, is there any questions regarding that? Hopefully we're meeting the needs of your agencies and of agencies statewide in the law enforcement side. That's our goal. We are going to add classes as we need to make sure that we are fulfilling those training needs. We don't want to carry wait lists. That's what we do not want to have. Okay, regarding in-service training. So Post provided 28 in-service training classes during the fourth quarter, training 562 officers and 31 dispatchers for a total of 324 hours. And we provided 28 different in-service training classes. And those are the radar, LIDAR classes, basic dispatch, emergency vehicle operations courses. Those courses are the ones we're talking about. So any questions regarding the fourth quarter report for the Training Bureau?
I don't see any. Let's go ahead and move into the dispatch curriculum then.
Okay. So I'm going to refer you to this document that's in your packet here. Just like the basic peace officer curriculum that Post updates each year, we also do a review and an update of the dispatcher curriculum. And it's been a couple of years since we have done one of these updates. So we've been working really hard with the executive committee for the dispatch group. And these are the recommendations that we would like to make to the council. Normally this has done in June, but we missed the June cutoff, so we would like to go ahead and make these recommendations now and see if the council would not approve them. So we always start January with new classes, the new training cycle for dispatch, and we've traditionally been putting on four classes a year. So we're hoping to get this curriculum in place by the end of the January, which is our first dispatcher class that we're going to be putting on. So just to give you a couple of hit the highlights in here. The old unit 3 and 4 have now been combined into the unit 2, which was the emergency medical dispatcher and the state and national computer files. We felt like that could all be rolled into the new unit number 2. And then we've added a class titled Callers in Crisis, which is now the new unit number 9. And you can see here at the bottom, basically this callers in crisis gives the dispatcher some background and some understanding of conditions that might be going on with an individual that's calling in or an individual that is getting called in on regarding callers that are in crisis. So this is kind of going in lines with a lot of the mental health training that we're providing to peace officers. Dispatchers need some of that too. They need a component of that as well. And so that's why we've added this Callers in Crisis course, which is about an hour and a half. And the new curriculum is still fitting within that 40-hour training week that we wanted to stay within. So that gives you a little bit of an overview of our changes that we would like to recommend and hopefully have in place before the end of this month with the council's approval.
All right, thank you. Any discussion from the council on any of these issues? If not, look for a motion to approve this the changes for this new program or additions to this program.
Move to approve.
Okay. Roland Cook. And a second?
I'll second that.
All right, second. All right. Any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion stands approved. All right, let's go ahead and move into Satellite Academy audit. Lieutenant Brewer.
Just like we talked about before, the administrative audits take place once a quarter. And now that we are going to have 10 academies statewide, we'll have to do 3 per quarter twice a year and then 2 per quarter. And then, of course, the full-time post academy makes up for the 11th academy. So now we have 11 academies across the state of Utah with the approval of the Uinta Basin Applied Technology Center coming online. So for this quarter, we've done 3 audits. We've conducted 3 audits. Solid Community College, I'm going to cover first. So I did have one exception to their audit, and that is we review all of the instructors that they use to make sure that they are currently post-certified. And in their defensive tactics program, we found a couple of their instructors who are not currently certified, meaning every 3 years they've got to go through the update process. And so we're working with the community college to ensure that these folks have an opportunity to come and get their certification renewed. But we've told them you can't use these people to teach for you until they go through the recertification process. So we did find that on the audit. I always check, get a list of their current instructors, and then I check it with our instructors to ensure that firearms, defensive tactics, so those are the 2 big ones because we provide the UVO training, that all those instructors are currently certified with the latest post standards. So that was the only thing the only exception I did find with the Salt Lake Community College. Any questions regarding the Salt Lake Community College program and their administrative audit? Okay, I'm going to move on to Utah Valley University. Oh, so I didn't say who the director of the community college program is. Currently, it is Dave Attridge. He is going to be retiring this year. So this will be his last year as the director, and then they'll choose a new director of their academy program. The Utah Valley University current director is Steve DeMille, and Sergeant Barry Watkins met with him, or he and I met with the director on December 8th and reviewed their program, and I have no exceptions to report regarding the Utah Valley University program. They're doing a great job down there. We really appreciate the ability we have to work with all the academies, really, but they've traditionally done a great job. The last academy, Dixie State University, their academy director is Chief Robert Flowers. He's the chief of Ivins, Santa Clara. Yeah, thank you, Chief. So he is also the director of the Dixie State University. And the only exception we found with their process was, once again, defensive tactics instructors. Now, this doesn't have to do with using those who are uncertified. They have one main defensive tactics instructor, and we require that they have a 1-to-7 ratio when you teach defensive tactics, and they're pretty much using just one individual during their training. So we're working that out to make sure that they have enough core instructors in that area that they can, regardless of whatever size they have of their class. So their classes have been traditionally running about 20-something, the low 20s to mid-20s. So that's at least three defensive tactics instructors, and they've only been running one. They put on one class each year, special functions officer, basic correctional officer, and one law enforcement block per year. So as they teach the defensive tactics, which each of those certifications, they need to make sure that they have this, the right ratio of instructors per student. And so that was the only thing that I found during the administrative audit. Any questions regarding that? So you can kind of see that we, as we go through and we review these things, this is a lot of, this takes a lot of time of manpower, because we've got to not only ensure that they're teaching the curriculum that's approved by the Post Council and making sure they stay on top of the changes that occur every year. So we review current schedules and instructors, and now that we have 10 academies that we're doing this, this keeps us pretty busy just on the administrative audit side of it. So, but it's good.
Thank you. Any further discussion, questions? Thank you, Lieutenant.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and move on into the drug guidelines. This is a subcommittee report from Director Stevenson. As you remember, last year we had a subcommittee that was formed to look at some of the issues behind the current existing, I should say then, drug policies and some of the sanctions. And we'll turn the time over to Scott for a report.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I want to thank the subcommittee members, Captain Sparks, the Deputy Director, Mayor Maliski from Pleasant View, and Dr. Checkitz, Sheriff Tracy, and Executive Director Cook. Executive Director Cook was not at the meeting, but we were interacting via text, and he was up to date on everything that we were discussing. So I want to thank them for their efforts. Council, we met back in October, as mandated by this council, to reevaluate the acceptance of applications regarding drug usage issues. As I explained to the council, it's been very frustrating because there's always an exception and there's always a different circumstance that's tied to a drug use situation. And these are never easy situations to deal with, especially with prescription drugs and people not knowing the gravity of the decision to take a drug that is not prescribed to them. So we came up with guidelines. And these guidelines were what we revisited when we met in October. Real quick, if you turn on page 3, as a result of our discussions, a lot of the discussion was around illicit drug usage. And we had to add a bullet point to say that there's going to be no variance for illicit drug usage, period, when it comes to considering somebody for application. So we just had to add that bullet. But now getting into the main reason why we are here. You go to page 4. In red is the language that we removed. Just briefly.
Director?
Yes.
I think some of the council members might be looking at the guidelines instead of the history policy.
The policy, not the guidelines. I'll get into the guidelines next. So the front page says criminal history. Sorry about that. Are we all on the same page? All right. So everything in red we have removed, or that our proposal is to remove this language. The committee, after discussing these guidelines, found that there was too much to it. We wanted to simplify it and make it easier to work with as we go through these cases. But the biggest difference you'll see at the bottom when it comes to emergency medical use or extended medical use. We condensed those columns and put 5 or fewer incidents, period, instead of having a layered breakdown of what time period somebody should have to wait for taking a drug in an emergency situation. We added what incident means. Number one, ingestion of a single dose of a prescription drug generally consists with a typical prescribed dosage of the drug. 2, ingestion of any amount of the drug less than the typical prescribed dosage. And 3, ingestion of any amount of the drug greater than the typical dosage would be considered inappropriate use, medical use, or of the drug. The reason why we defined that is because there's varying levels, dosages, if you will, and so we wanted to kind of clarify that with anticipation that somebody arguing, well, I was below the recommended dosage as prescribed. And committee, please feel free to chime in. I don't remember everything that we discussed in that meeting. Ongoing medical usage, we eliminated completely because we didn't see that there was a reason why somebody should be able to continually take these drugs in the name of emergency usage. If they have an emergency, then they should go to a doctor and receive their own prescription. Any questions up to that point? Which led us to deleting a lot of the explanation and definition of extended medical use because, again, we consolidated and condensed those guidelines to reflect an easier guideline to use. Those are the highlights this is for accepting applications. This is not for officers that are in the system, but people trying to get into the system. And these are waiting periods that you view in those guidelines. I'll give you a chance to
any questions. There's considerable amount of discussion during the meeting just to try to clarify a few things to make it both easier to understand on those who were applying, plus easier to understand those who were here at post that would have to look at a situation and then make a recommendation. And I believe that the committee did some very good work here in trying to clean up and basically solidify the major issues of what concerns post and law enforcement in these kinds of cases. I assume we would need a motion to accept this.
Please.
Any further discussion? Colonel Fear.
Some clarification on the falsification of the application. How do you handle a situation where a person took some type of a prescribed medication for somebody else that they didn't believe it was on the schedule, and they didn't report it, and later they found out, oh, no, that was one of the scheduled things I needed to report, and then they do report. Is that falsification or a mistake? How do you guys look at that?
We still, again, it's a case-by-case basis, but we would, they took the drug, and they should have known that it's not their prescription, therefore they should not have taken it. What I have found, again, not a formal study, but just asking random people, most people know that it's illegal to take somebody else's prescription drug, but they don't understand the severity of it or the implications when they apply to be an officer. Most people know. In fact, we've conducted interviews. That's one of the questions we ask those candidates. Did you know it was illegal? Yes. But they didn't know the severity of it. So we look at it. You take it, then you're going to have to wait the waiting period.
So 2 years would apply to that?
Yes. Yes.
Any further questions? All right. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we accept the new council disciplinary guidelines.
Okay.
Is that the correct word?
No, that's just the policy.
Policy.
Yes. I'm going to the guidelines next.
Okay, so policy. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we got two. John Crowley? Okay, second. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, a call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. Accept.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Now going into the post-disciplinary guidelines. As you'll see in red, we are adding, not subtracting in this circumstance. Under Category A, we have an illicit or Schedule 1 drug. The new law that was passed by the legislation last year, or legislature, I should say, lowered drug categories or classifications. So a felony is now a Class A. Class A is now a Class B. We had to adjust the guidelines to reflect those changes in the law. So that's what you see in Category A. Actually, all of it is due to the changes in the law. Any questions about these guidelines?
All right. No questions, then we'll call for a motion concerning the guidelines.
Move to accept.
Okay, move to accept.
Second.
And a second. Commissioner Gibson. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor to accept the post-disciplinary guidelines, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Stand approved.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, we'll go ahead and move forward with the disciplinary cases. Mr. Yockey.
Good morning, council members. This morning we have 10 disciplinary cases to be heard. Just as a quick reminder, this is for Julie's behalf. If you need to recuse yourself, please indicate to Julie. And then for integrity of the record, please refrain from mentioning anything about the case if you do need to recuse yourself from a matter. I'll go ahead and jump right into it. The first matter to be heard before this council is the certification of Kyle Anderson. He is currently a member of the Utah Department of Corrections. The substantiated allegation is falsification of government records, which falls under Category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a six-month suspension. And a summary of the facts are as follows. On September 30th, 2014, Kyle Anderson was investigated by his agency for signing his supervisor's name on a pre-sentence addendum report, which he had prepared. During Garrity interviews with UDC, Utah Department of Corrections, and Post, Anderson admitted he looked at his supervisor's signature on another report in order to replicate it. Anderson admitted to signing his supervisor's name without her knowledge or consent. Anderson stated he signed his supervisor's signature because his supervisor was out of town and he did not want to drive to another location to find his supervisor to sign the document. On November 20th, 2015, Anderson waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action. Anderson has actually since retired, so my information about him currently being employed with the Utah Department of Corrections is null and void.
Okay. Is there anyone here for, or in behalf of, or is Mr. Anderson here today? All right, seeing no one. I'll look for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I need to recuse myself.
Okay. Director Cook.
I move to accept the recommendation.
All right, we have a motion to accept the recommendation. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second, Commissioner Gibson. Any further discussion? All those in favor of accepting the recommendation as recommended, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
The next matter before the council is the certification of Jerry L. Anderson, Jr. He is formerly a member of the Pleasant View City Police Department. Substantiated allegation is sex on duty and a BCI violation, which falls under Category B and Category E of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a three-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On or about April 23rd, 2014, Jerry Anderson began a sexual relationship with a woman he met during a police call for service. Anderson had at least one sexual encounter with the woman while he was on duty, and his relationship later became public via social media. Subsequently, an administrative investigation was conducted by a neighboring agency. During a Garrity interview, Anderson admitted going to the woman's home and having sex while he was on duty. Anderson also admitted to using his BCI access to view an outstanding warrant on the woman and then contacting the court to pay for it. An interview with the woman confirmed Anderson's admission regarding him having sex while on duty. On August 11, 2014, Anderson resigned from his agency. Anderson declined to participate in the post-investigative process, and on December 15, 2015, Anderson waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right. Is Mr. Anderson or an attorney, counsel here for him?
Mr. Chairman, I'll need to recuse myself on this issue.
Okay. I see no representation that Mr. Anderson is here. I'll look for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I have a question first.
All right.
And I
I think it would be for Jeremy. On the back page of the back of the first page, there's a statement by the officer that said that he did not meet the woman on a call. Just wondering if that has any bearing on the recommendation.
He did meet her on a call, but apparently he knew her previously. But that's when he first encountered her on the call, and that's when the relationship started.
Okay. And so can you tell me as a follow-up, you know, there's quite a range as I look at the disciplinary guidelines here. There's quite a range between 1.5 years to revocation. Can you just give me an idea of why the recommendation settled in at the 3 years?
So the 3 years is based on the two violations. We have a Category B and a Category E, so a sex on duty and also the BCI violation for looking up the warrant and then paying for the warrant. So because of the two offenses, Post felt that the... Oh, and sex on duty is a three-year baseline.
Based on...
So it's a Category B, which falls under a three-year baseline. So that's what we generally seek is a three-year baseline.
I guess I'll just make a quick statement here. This particular case was in my county proper, not one that I have any connection with of any kind. But the reason that it kind of sticks in my mind is because of all of the kind of fallout that happened around this case in our community. And, you know, as I look at this group, and I've participated now for quite a while, it's become clear to me that this group of individuals that sits at this table is very concerned about protecting the image and the integrity of the profession in which so many of you are involved with. And I will just say this one was very damaging in my community to the perception of this profession. And, you know, I don't want to make things worse than they are, but to me, if I had a vote here, it would probably be for the higher end of the spectrum, which would be revocation, because of the damage I think that has been done to the profession as a result of this case. And so, you know, that's just I don't know that I can that I'm going to stick my sword in that one. But it feels to me like with the circumstances as they've been presented. And the fact that is a reasonable baseline, based upon the baseline that we have before us, I would like to see us go with the revocation in this particular case. That's my suggestion.
Okay. Is that a form of a motion then?
Motion.
All right. I have a motion then to change the three-year recommended suspension to revocation. Do we have a second on that?
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a second on this. Is there further discussion from this body? No further discussion? All right, we have a motion and a second to move from a 3-year suspension to revocation. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
All right, we're going to split vote then. Let's go ahead and those in favor, raise their hands. Four. All those opposed, please raise your hands. Three, four, six, seven, eight. All right, we'll deem that motion has failed, and we will look for another motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to accept post recommendation of a 3-year suspension.
All right, we have a second on that. Take either. Okay. Ms. Gibson.
Commissioner Gibson.
All right. Now the motion is to approve or deny the 3-year suspension as recommended by Post. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. That passes unanimously.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Brad Gailey. He is currently employed with the Utah Highway Patrol. Substantiated allegation is disorderly conduct, which falls under Category F of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a letter of caution, and this is based on the nature of the offense. A summary of the facts are as follows. On November 7th, 2014, at about 8 p.m., Brad Gailey's neighbors were having a party as Gailey and his family were attempting to sleep. Gailey confronted his neighbors and asked them to keep the noise down. They agreed, but the noise continued, and about an hour later, Gailey again confronted the neighbors about the noise. While he was there, a female swore at Gailey and told him to go home. Gailey approached the female and knocked a cup from her hand, splashing the contents on nearby people. The neighbors called the local police agency, who responded and conducted an investigation. At the conclusion of the investigation, the case was screened with the county attorney. Gailey was charged and pled guilty to disorderly conduct, a Class C misdemeanor. During the agency and post-Garrity interviews, Gailey admitted he became upset at comments the female made and knocked the cup she was holding out of her hand. On November 24, 2015, Gailey waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Mr. Gailey or counsel present?
Yes.
I'd like to address post.
Mr. Chair and Council, the only thing I wish to say today is I am truly sorry for my actions, and I'm prepared for whatever is deemed necessary. So, thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Gailey from the Council?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple questions, maybe not necessarily for him, but I'm not sure if I can have answer to these questions. One is, are we able to know how long Mr. Gailey's been in service? And does he have any prior incidents with post?
You're talking about years of service?
Yeah, years of service, yes.
2.5 years of service and no prior incidents with post.
Was there a second question? All right. Having no further discussion, we have a recommendation of a letter of caution. I'll take a motion.
I'll make a motion. We want to do the recommendation.
Okay. Gibson? Second from Kenton Crowley.
Chairman, I'm recusing myself on this.
All right. Colonel Fuhrer will be recusing himself. I should have time to write that down. That's okay. All right. We have a motion, a second for acceptance of a letter of caution. Any other further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That stands approved.
All right. If I may proceed.
Yes, sir.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Bill R. Hansen. Substantiated allegation is driving under the influence, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is an 18-month suspension, and that's based on the high breath alcohol content. A summary of the facts are as follows. On July 16, 2015, Bill Hansen was stopped by a local law enforcement officer for not wearing his seatbelt and failing to maintain his lane of travel. The officer detected the odor of alcohol coming from Hansen and asked Hansen to perform standardized field sobriety tests. The officer determined Hansen was impaired and arrested him for DUI. Hansen's breath alcohol content was 0.16. The officer cited and released Hansen to a responsible party. Hansen did not notify his supervisor about his arrest. When his agency became aware of the arrest, Hansen was placed on administrative leave and later resigned. On September 2, 2015, Hansen entered a guilty plea to the amended charge of impaired driving. On November 23, 2015, Hansen waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action. Just quickly, there is a letter from an administrator along with this. So if you haven't had time, please let the chair know.
All right, I'll give the council a minute to review that letter.
just state that even though I have not been involved in this in any way as a Weber County Commissioner, I think it would be appropriate for me to recuse on this issue.
Okay, Commissioner Gibson. All right. That's a fairly short letter. Anyone who hasn't had the time to read that? All right. We have a recommendation for an 18-month suspension from Post. I'll look for a motion.
Motion to accept.
Okay. Chief Carpenter, motion to accept. Is there
Sir,
a second? Yes.
He's present.
Oh, is he here? I'm sorry. I did not ask. Mr. Hanson.
Just for the record, I did not show up for duty in my uniform or anything else like that. The administration found out before I was able to tell them. But I have no excuses for what I've done that night. I can't blame anybody or anything. It's something that I must be held accountable for. And I deeply apologize for that. But that was the hardest thing I ever had to do, was tell my wife and children about my mistake. And losing my career has been a pretty tough shot on my family. And I have no one to blame but myself. I know this has shed a bad light on myself, my family, my agency, and my community. And all I want to do is try to make this right and try to hold myself accountable for my actions. And I'm sorry that I have put us here today, and thank you for your time.
Before you go, Mr. Hanson, are there any questions from Post Council? Okay, thank you. All right. Sorry for jumping ahead there. Now, we'll go ahead and entertain a motion. We have an 18-month suspension that's been recommended by Post. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question before maybe we get to that point. Okay. Where the baseline is 1 year suspension on a category D, is there a particular reason 18 months was recommended?
Generally post when we have a higher breath alcohol content, so this would be double 0.16. That's why we went with the 18 months, and that's typical for what we've done in the past. Okay.
So that would be looked at as an aggravating rather than mitigating?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Commissioner Gibson is abstaining. All right. We have a motion then.
Motion to accept
18
months.
Okay, Colonel Fuhrer. And we have a second.
That's a second.
Motion and second for the 18-month suspension. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Stands approved. Thank you. Okay. Next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Mike P. Little. He is formerly a member of the Utah Department of Corrections. Substantiated allegations are issuing a bad check, 4 counts, and lying under Garrity. This falls under Category A of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is revocation. A summary of the facts are as follows. Between December 16, 2013 and December 17, 2013, Mike Little wrote 3 checks to 3 retail stores totaling $2,346.39. On December 31st, 2013, Little's Bank closed his checking account with a negative balance of $1,099.21. None of the 3 checks he wrote cleared the bank. On January 1st, 2014, Little went to a local shooting range and wrote a check on his closed account for $68.09 to pay for some ammunition. This check was also returned to the business. On January 22, 2014, Little was investigated by a local police agency for issuing a bad check to retail stores on December 17, 2013. During the investigation, Little told the investigating officer the checks were fraudulent and a family member wrote them. Little told the officer he did not use checks. Little was charged in district court for issuing a bad check, but the case was later dismissed after Little paid the retail stores the money he owed. On March 10, 2014, Little submitted to a Garrity interview with UDC. In the interview, Little said he did not know how much money was in his account, but when he wrote the checks. Little also stated that he had deposited $1,000 in his account at the time he wrote the checks. Subsequently, on March 17, 2014, Little called the Utah Department of Corrections and said that he had not deposited the $1,000, but instead used the money to live on. Little did not participate in the post-investigation investigative process. Little failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and on November 13, 2015, when an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Little.
Okay, thank you. Is Mr. Little or his counsel here? All right, I see no representation or Mr. Little. We have a post-recommendation of revocation. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I need to recuse myself.
All right, Director Cook will recuse himself.
Move to accept the recommendation.
Hawks. MK looks good here. All right, we have a motion for revocation. We have a second. All right, and a second. Mr. Bailey. All right, we have a motion and a second for revocation. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Before we start this next case, it is a case from my office, so I am going to go ahead and pass the chair. I think it would be appropriate that way. I'll move that to the vice chair at this time, maybe.
Just before you pass it, Chair, would you be recusing yourself just so we can put on the record?
Yes.
May I proceed?
Please.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Bodie Nielsen. He is currently employed with the Utah County Sheriff's Office. A substantiated allegation is unlawful use or possession of a controlled substance and lying on a post application. This falls under Category B under the newly adopted guidelines that were adopted today. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a three-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. Sometime between January and March of 2014, Bodie Nielsen, a special functions officer with the Utah State Hospital, became sick and used three doses of his wife's leftover prescription cough medicine. The cough medicine was a Schedule II controlled substance. On March 23, 2015, Post reviewed Nielsen's application for correctional officer training and became aware of Nielsen's unlawful use of prescription drug, which he disclosed in his application. Nielsen also disclosed he took two doses of his father's prescribed lidocaine patches before he started the SFO Special Functions Officer Academy in 2012, and two doses of his mother's prescribed testosterone gel, which he used while attending the Law Enforcement Officer Academy in 2013. Nielsen did not disclose the lidocaine use on his post application in 2012 and did not notify Post of the testosterone use while he was attending the academy. On March 24, 2015, during a Garrity interview with Post, Nielsen admitted using his father's lidocaine patches and omitting the information on his 2012 application. He also admitted using his mother's testosterone gel while he was attending the academy and admitted not notifying Post. Nielsen also admitted to using his wife's prescription cough medicine. Nielsen said he was aware he could not use another person's prescription, but didn't really think that it was that big of a deal, and he wanted to save a trip to the doctor. On August 24, 2015, Bodie Nielsen waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
I'd also like to point out that there is a letter from Sheriff Tracy. Take a moment to review that. Is Mr. Bodie or his counsel here? Further discussion?
Medicine was listed on the post application. Is that right?
The most recent application for corrections training was listed on that.
Correct.
So the question I have then, so the post is recommending 3-year suspension. Is that based on this new document, which is an inappropriate medical use, 1 to 4 incidents within 2 years, with the 2 years for not reporting as well? Is that how they came up with that recommendation?
So you're looking at the policy, and so that's waiting, if Director, if I get this wrong, please clarify. But that's the waiting periods in which an officer would need to be before they are an officer. Once an officer becomes certified, we use the post-disciplinary guidelines. And so this would be the guidelines we're using off the new, the newly adopted guidelines that were adopted today. That would fall under a Category B because it was a Schedule 2 drug, and it would be now a Class A misdemeanor under the new legislation adopted by the legislature.
Do I have a motion to accept Post's recommendation?
Vice Chair, I make a motion to change it to 1.5 years at the bottom of the Category B schedule, as outlined.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
Who is that? Who is the second?
I have questions of the officer first.
My questions are just around... Why were you using the other medications? What was your purpose in?
I used to work shipping and receiving, and so I'd use the lidocaine patches on my back when I'd gotten injured at work. My muscles were kind of tense. And then the infertility was for the testosterone gel, but we've since went to the doctor to address that issue.
Okay. Any further questions?
A statement that I appreciated what some of the statements that Sheriff Tracy mentioned in his letter. One in particular that strikes me is that I think we have to use a little bit of judgment in these particular cases. I know it's hard, and that's why we have the guidelines, right? Because it's all of there are different unique circumstances in every one. But one of the ones that kind of stuck out to me, statements from Sheriff Tracy that stuck out to me like sore thumb, was none of the uses were an attempt to thwart the law to provide economic gain or to cover or hide an addiction. And to me, that's the thing that strikes me in this letter that makes me think that maybe some judgment and leniency on the scale would be appropriate in this particular case. And from everything I know, I'm inclined to believe the judgment that Sheriff Tracy has had on that particular issue.
This is not part of the discussion, but I want to emphasize with the council, I will never go outside the guidelines. It's your prerogative. This is your document. But as a recommendation, I am very consistent. We go to the baseline, and if it needs to be whatever the recommendation needs to deviate from the baseline, then I will do that, and I will provide justification, but I will never go outside.
And let me just reply by saying thank you for that, because that gives us consistency as it comes forward. And I think that's exactly what our role here is to look within those guidelines and figure out if there are circumstances in one way or another. And so I hope that it's never taken as I've made two motions now to deviate slightly in this meeting from what you recommended. And I don't do that in any shape or form as a disrespect for your recommendations. I just think that's our role. This one makes sense to me at a lighter, on the lower end of that scale.
Go ahead.
If I could, I'd like to make some comments too. I got to tell you, Mr. Nielsen scored big in my heart in regards to, and in my mind, in regards to having Sheriff Tracy write that letter of support. He's got to be one of the most highest character and integrity folks that we've had in law enforcement for many years. And I know that I trust him and often seek his input on things. And I think it's important that we show some deference when someone admits what they're doing wrong and tries to come forward when they found that out. But I don't know that that leads to a three-step category change in this particular case. I mean, to me, I like the recommendation of a year and a half, taking it down to the bottom of the baseline, but dropping through three categories. I just can't do it in my mind anyway. And I think, as I did, I think last meeting, I just cautioned us to be very careful. This is a pretty slippery slope. Again, Mr. Nielsen's very lucky to have someone like Sheriff Tracy stepping up for him. But this is a real problem among our the people that we recruit and so on. So the only other piece I want to say that I think maybe we need to do more of is make sure that we're getting this information out in training. We need to make sure that we're getting it out to the cadets, that we're getting out to potential cadets, even if it's like handouts with pictures, so that everyone understands what we're looking for. Because I've only been doing this about 3 years, and it seems like every single time we have one of these meetings, one of these hearings, there's someone who doesn't understand that they're not supposed to be taking it. Or I think, as Director Stevenson pointed out, they know it's wrong, but they don't know the severity. So that's my two cents. I'm just not convinced we can go three steps down in this particular case from my point of view. So,
can I just ask?
Please.
So I just need to make sure I understand then, because I'm confused with that. Wasn't the motion 1.5 years? And isn't that within the category B under the proposed guidelines that we just did?
Yes, it is. The only thing I was pointing out is I think Sheriff Tracy and his was asking for a letter of caution.
Oh, I see.
And I just don't feel comfortable going that low. And that would take us three categories down. I don't have a problem moving it to the bottom. Yeah. Yeah.
Council Chair, the officer wanted to make a quick statement.
To your question, I did not address. My wife was also sick when I became sick. I'm not a doctor, but I kind of figured we had the same thing, so that's why I had used her cough medicine. And during all this, I also don't regret keeping my integrity and disclosing this, even though this has become such a large issue. I don't feel bad for keeping my integrity and disclosing this.
Is there a substitute motion? I believe we have a first and a second. We'll call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
So just to clarify, it was adopted for a 1.5 year.
Correct.
Okay. Thank
you. All right. Thank you, Council, for your considerations on that case. Let's go to next, Sheila Reed.
Next matter before the Council is the certification of Sheila Reed. She is currently a member of the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office. Substantiated allegation is a DUI, which falls under Category D of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a one-year suspension. A summary of the facts are as follows. On June 7, 2015, Sheila Reed was arrested for driving under the influence by a local agency. Prior to her arrest, Reed had consumed 2 shots of vodka at her residence and then left when she and her daughter began to argue. At approximately 21:30 hours, Reed was observed by police driving towards her home. As she approached her home, Reed turned off her lights, her headlights, and failed to signal before turning into her driveway. Reed was contacted by police after she pulled into her driveway and asked to perform standardized field sobriety test. During the test, Reed showed signs of impairment and was arrested. Reed's breath alcohol content was 0.091. On September 10th, 2015, Reed pled guilty to the amended charge of impaired driving. And on November 7, 2015, Reed waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Ms. Reed or counsel here? Ms. Reed.
I didn't really prepare anything to say other than the fact that I take full responsibility for my lack of judgment getting behind the wheel. There was some I would consider a mitigating fact. I do have some problems with my daughter who suffers from several mental illnesses that led to my very, very bad choice of getting behind the wheel. And I would like to point out that this is not something that is my habit, never has been, never will be again. But then again, that doesn't take away from the fact that I broke the law, and I fully understand that.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Reed from the council? All right, seeing none, we'll go for a motion. Mr. Chair.
I had a question. So, sort of confused, you said please explain the mitigating circumstance associated with your daughter, how you see it as mitigating?
As far as how I see it, like I said, she suffers from, she's been diagnosed with 3 mental illnesses. She's 25 years old, still lives with us. And
about 2 days prior to this incident, she had just been released, from a behavioral hospital after her 3rd suicide attempt. There is never any excuse for getting behind the wheel when you're under the influence of alcohol. But the stress of the last several months leading up to that and the stress of her getting back out of the hospital probably added to me making a decision that I obviously definitely shouldn't have made. Anybody who has lived with somebody with mental illnesses and has suicidal tendencies understands that it is a very, very stressful situation to be in. Again, that's probably what I consider mitigating as far as leading to my not thinking about what I was doing and getting behind the wheel. But I still take full responsibility for doing that. Does that make sense?
And your belief was that the drinking the vodka prior to leaving your home and entering the vehicle was associated with your stress level.
And just to clarify, just so we're not getting too much into questioning,
we've already had the hearing and everything, but I'll allow this one.
You said it was you presented mitigating circumstance. I don't understand what you mean, and I'm asking for a clarification.
Just so we can maintain the integrity, just so for on appeal and everything for the appellate court, I just want to make sure that we're not questioning the individual on the case and stuff like that. But this is allowable. So.
I'm questioning you on your presentation of mitigating circumstance.
The getting behind the wheel after I had consumed. She, and I don't want to put anything on her, but oftentimes people that suffer from severe depression and anxiety can get into fairly foul moods. Her new medications she had just gotten put on in the Provo Behavioral Hospital hadn't kicked in yet. It does take several weeks to do that. And she started to get very argumentative and foul, and so I, at one point, I just told my husband, I said, you know, I've got to get out of here for a minute so that we didn't have some kind of blow up. And I hadn't even thought about the fact that I had consumed. I guess that would be my, not the consuming of, but getting behind the wheel. And it just came to a point where I just didn't want to, I should have walked, obviously. So.
Any further questions? All right, I'll look for a motion.
I'll move that we accept the recommendation.
Okay, we have a 1-year suspension recommendation and a motion to accept that. Commissioner Gibson, a second. A second from Sheriff Decker. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor? The 1-year suspension, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's approved.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Matthew Rout. He is formerly a member of the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. Substantiated allegation is assault with bodily injury which falls under Category C of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 3-year suspension, and that is based on the nature of the offense and the fact that the prisoner was fully restrained at the time of the offense. A summary of the facts are as follows. On July 21st, 2014, Matthew Rout was involved in an altercation with a disruptive prisoner in a court holding cell. After telling the prisoner to be quiet, Rout began to close the cell door. The prisoner, who was significantly smaller than Rout, was restrained with handcuffs and leg restraints, started to move towards the cell door. Rout allegedly perceived a threat and stepped inside the cell, hitting the prisoner in the chest with open hands and sending the prisoner back into the corner. Rout then went into the cell and placed his hands around the prisoner's neck and threw him to the other side of the cell. According to Rout, the prisoner struck Rout in the groin several times with his knee during the incident. Rout reported that he was attempting to use the pressure points under the prisoner's jaw to get him to stop. On December 12, 2015, Rout waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right. Is Mr. Rout here or his representative? All right, I see no one. Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion. We accept the 3-year suspension.
All right, we have a motion. Director Cook for 3-year suspension. Is there a second?
Second.
Second, Colonel Fuhrer. I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Next case.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Scotty Sorensen. He is formerly a member of the Weber County Sheriff's Office. Substantiated allegation is use / possession of controlled substance, a Schedule II drug, not obtained under a valid prescription. This falls under Category B of the newly adopted guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a 3-year suspension based under the new guidelines. A summary of the facts are as follows. On March 12, 2015, the Weber County Sheriff's Office learned Scotty Sorensen was obtaining prescription narcotics, oxycodone, from a friend and had been doing so for more than a year. An internal investigation was conducted by Weber County Sheriff's Office, and a local agency was asked to conduct a criminal investigation into the matter. Weber County Sheriff's Office conducted a Garrity interview with Sorensen, where he admitted to obtaining the oxycodone from a friend in order to supplement his own prescription. Sorensen had a prescription for oxycodone to alleviate his pain from an on-the-job injury sustained a couple years earlier. Sorensen stated he would not take his oxycodone as prescribed and took as many as he needed when he was not working. Sorensen said he would only obtain oxycodone from his friend when he ran out of his own prescription. Sorensen's friend declined to participate in the internal investigation. On March 27, 2015, Sorensen submitted his resignation to Weber County Sheriff's Office. And on March 30, 2015, the criminal case on Sorensen was closed due to lack of information. Both Sorensen and his friend refused to cooperate with criminal investigation. Post conducted a Garrity interview with Sorensen, who admitted to obtaining additional oxycodone pills from his friend when he ran out of his own. Sorensen said he hesitated to go back to his office for fear the doctor would think Sorensen was addicted to oxycodone. Sorensen said it was easier to get oxycodone from his friend and took advantage of their relationship. On November 17, 2015, Sorensen waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Mr. Sorensen, or is counsel here?
Yes.
Would you like to address post?
Yes.
Post counsel, thanks for letting me speak. As you heard from the statement, I have made some decisions that has costed me a lot, and my wife, my friends, and my job. I'm embarrassed and ashamed of my actions, as I have let down my family, my friends, my coworkers, and the residents of Weber County. I was in law enforcement for 18 and a half years and had no discipline issues up to this point, and until this last year was serving honorably. I love law enforcement and would like to return to it someday. I apologize for my actions, knowing it was wrong, and still doing it, and taking advantage of the situation, and apologize to the law enforcement community for my actions. Thank you.
Now, before you go, is there any questions from Mr. Sorensen from the council?
I would like to recuse on the issue.
Okay. Commissioner Gibson will recuse himself. Are there any questions? All right, thank you. All right. I'll look for a motion. There's a recommendation for a 3-year suspension. Motion. Oh, excuse me. The revocation. I'm sorry.
Motion to accept.
So it wouldn't be so it'd be a 3 years. So revocation was the old guidelines.
Okay.
3 years would be under the new proposed guidelines.
All right. 3 years under the new guidelines. Correct.
Motion to accept.
Okay. We have a motion to accept and a second. Right then. Okay. We have a motion and a second for the 3-year suspension. Any further discussion? Right, call for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, next case.
The final matter before the council is the certification of David R. Stobart. He is currently employed with the Department of Natural Resources Parks and Recreation. Substantiated allegation is intoxication, which falls under Category F of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended disciplinary action is a nine-month suspension, and that's based on the failure to comply with orders given by police and supervisors. A summary of the facts are as follows. On February 22, 2014, David Stobart was at his home consuming alcohol with his girlfriend. Stobart's girlfriend got upset because Stobart had too much to drink and was ignoring her. Stobart's girlfriend left the residence and drove to her home. Approximately 30 minutes later, Stobart drove to his girlfriend's residence to try to talk to her. Stobart's girlfriend told him she did not want to talk to him and told him to leave several times. According to Stobart's girlfriend, he knocked on the door and the window while yelling at her to open the door. After approximately 45 minutes of Stobart knocking on the door and windows, his girlfriend called the police. When a deputy arrived and began to exit his vehicle, he could hear Stobart pounding on the door and yelling, "Open the fucking door." Stobart was issued a citation, and Stobart's supervisor drove him home. The following morning, Stobart drove back to his girlfriend's house. Stobart was confronted by his supervisor at his girlfriend's house and taken home once again. Stobart later pled no contest to intoxication, and on November 2, 2015, David Stobart waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
All right. Is Mr. Stobart here or his representative?
Oh, and just before I just noticed this, there is a letter from a chief for Mr. Stobart.
All right.
From his agency.
All right, Mr. Stobart, will you hold off a second? Let's give the council time to read that. Hopefully the council's had opportunity to read that letter. Mr. Stobart.
I want to thank the council for allowing me to speak to you today. And at the same time, there's no words I could find to describe the level of shame that I feel to have to stand in front of you. I have always taken ownership of this situation, and I've never hid behind any excuses. And I also know that I own the consequences of that night. But I want the council to know that it's not indicative of my value system, how I think or how I operate. And you had an opportunity to read the letter of support, and I'd like to point out that, that even though the division supports my continued employment, they can only do so for 3 months suspension before they would have to terminate my employment. After this incident, I was put on administrative leave and reviewed, and I was allowed to, given the opportunity to go back to work. And my job allows me a great opportunity to serve the public, to solve problems, to work within the community. And it's only been during that time that I've ever given myself a sense of redemption from this incident. It's when I've had the opportunity to serve my community and the public that visits where I work. So I'm just here to humbly request any consideration of leniency in considering a 3-month suspension so that hopefully the demand of the public for accountability is met and then I have an opportunity at one time to go back to work and continue my career with the division. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Stovart? Okay, seeing none. Oh, we do.
Okay. Is there, I noticed that it just says still employed. Was there any disciplinary action taken besides put him in a spot that's
as submitted? Indicated by Mr. Stovart, I don't have the exact time, but there was administrative action.
I was put on administrative leave and reviewed.
Did you receive leave without pay, or a written warning from your division or anything?
I'm not aware of anything that might have been put in the file as of yet.
Wow.
I can't say that there hasn't been, but I...
Okay, thanks.
Although I'm very sympathetic to the fact that you're employed and need your employment, I look at the individuals who have come before us today and many in the last many years that we've done this, and in this report, I see that... Yeah, of course, I'm a trooper, so I think DUIs as well. I see that unlawful detention, disorderly conduct, but for an individual to drive to a girlfriend's home after consuming alcohol, pound on the door for 45 minutes, and then go to a PBT of 0.10, just the math doesn't add up that when you were driving that vehicle, you weren't impaired. And then the next day, the supervisor responds and talks about the intoxicated level once again. So it's hard for me to... recommend a 3-month suspension when we've just suspended a DUI for 1 year and a DUI twice legal limit for 18 months. The only thing different in this is that we don't have the charge, but we have the information to support that finding, at least in my eyes, and I could be wrong, but if anything, I would propose, and I won't, that it be increased rather than decreased.
And just for clarification,
you can look whatever you want into the record, but as far as the allegations that were actually substantiated, we only have intoxication. The other ones were not substantiated. So,
thank you. Any further discussion or questions from the council? All right, I'll look for a motion.
I didn't make a motion, I just made a statement.
Okay.
I'll move that we adopt the recommendation.
Okay. Commissioner Gibson, the motion was to adopt the recommendation of a 9-month suspension. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Chief Parker. All right, we have a motion and a second to adopt the 9-month suspension. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Is there more than one opposed?
Two.
Okay, two opposed. All right, we deem that that motion is approved, but not unanimous. All right, thank you. We'll move to the last portion of our meeting, which is to schedule the next meeting.
We usually do it in conjunction with the chief's
conference. Monday is the 21st.
Roundtable is on the 24th.
After the roundtable.
Okay. March 24th, that would be a Thursday.
out of St. George, if that's correct.
And we'll send out emails and find you the location. Usually we get about 1,300.
Yeah.
That seems to work. Can you guys direct the sheriff right away?
Yes. Oh, yes. All right, March has been proposed, March 24th at 1,300 in St. George.
And location.
Yeah. Right. Location to be announced. Is there anything further to come before this body? All right. Seeing nothing further, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved. And I'm sure there's a second. Okay.
Yeah,
we're going to take it. All right. So motion second to adjourn. All those who are willing to adjourn, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Councilor.